This is Right from the Deep.
I'm Karen Ball.
I'm Erin Taylor Young.
And I'm Angela Hunt.
And this is the show that answers the question,
why am I doing this?
Yes, that was Angela Hunt, and she is going to be telling us exactly that. Why is she doing this? We are so delighted to have her with us today to talk about the deep, to encourage and equip you in the deep. And I know, Karen, you've been great friends with Angie for a long time, so why don't you tell us what you know about her?
I first met Dr. Angela Hunt, better known as Angie Hunt, probably 25 years ago, Angie. Do you think that's about when we did it? Maybe even longer.
I mean, that sounds right.
Yeah, I think you and I probably started when we were 5 or 6 years old in publishing.
There you go.
But when you look back on Angie's career, what you see is that she has nearly 4 million copies of her book sold worldwide. I'm not talking 4 million copies in print. I'm talking 4 million copies sold worldwide. She honed her craft for 5 years in writing for magazines, and her first book came out in 1988. And since then, she's written over 130 books in fiction and nonfiction for children and adults. And in 2007, her book, Don't Bet Against Me, which she wrote with Deanna Favre. I can never say that name right. Favre. Anyway, she's the wife of Brett Favre, who was with the Green Bay Packers. That book spent several weeks on the New York Times bestseller list. Angie's novels have won or been nominated for several prestigious industry awards, including the Rita, the Christie, the Holt Medallion. Romantic Times Book Club gave her a Lifetime Achievement Award in 2006, although she has a whole lot more to do in her lifetime. Her best-selling novel, The Note, was filmed as a Hallmark Channel's Christmas movie in 2007, and it became one of the channel's highest-rated original movies ever produced. So as you can see, Angie has been doing the work of being a writer. She's been doing the work, and she's been living it and writing from both the deep and the high places. So Angie, welcome. We are delighted you're here with us today.
Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah.
Angie's going to talk about the deep places. And let's just do a little recap of that. Karen, why don't you tell us your concept of the deep?
Well, for me, when I talk about the deep, I'm talking about those deep, dark places that we end up in where we're not quite sure why, as we asked at the beginning, why we're still doing this. Have I accomplished anything in the last several years as publishing has gone through just unbelievable changes? I've seen folks from the very newbies to the bestsellers who are struggling and who are wondering if anything that they've done has mattered. We're talking about places where we deal with frustration, discouragement, all those kinds of things. So that is the deep for me. Erin, how about you?
For me, the deep is where we're immersed in God, where we let his word sink deep into our hearts. It meets us in the deep trials. God meets us there. We can breathe God when we feel like we're drowning in those trials.
Mm-hmm. So, Angie, when you think about that, when you think about living from the deep and writing from the deep, what does that mean to you?
Oh, lots of different things, actually. If I'm writing, say, a historical novel or even a contemporary, it can mean going deep in the research of a place, of a disease,
right,
of all sorts of things that, you know, the story is about. And anybody can write a little surface story, but to really go deep into your research and get all the details correct, that's really important to me because I think it makes the story come to life.
Yes.
Another thing going deep means as a novelist is that you literally have to sort of focus on this story almost 24/7. When I'm working on a novel, I think about it when I'm washing dishes. I think about it when I'm sweeping the floor. I think about it in the shower. I'm always thinking about this story and the people in it. And, you know, some writers can write more than one book at a time. And my hat's off to them because I can't do it.
Yeah.
Because I'm sort of a monomaniac. I just have to focus in on that one thing. But by far the most personal thing going deep means for me is when I'm writing about the things I can't even talk about without crying. A lot of times it's something that's very personal in my relationship with God, with my family, with
right,
my children, with some issue that we've had to deal with, and it's difficult to deal with. And even though I can't talk about it, I can write about it,
mm-hmm,
sometimes with tears streaming over my cheeks. And I know that if it affects me that deeply, that it's bound to be affecting other people as well.
I remember reading a quote one time that said, if as you're writing, you aren't laughing or crying or being affected by what you're writing, there's no way that you're going to impact the people who will read it.
Absolutely.
So do you have any specific things that you can share with us, Angie, of a time when you were going through that deep place where it was a really dark and hard learning experience? Can you share with us some of those experiences and what you did, what helped you in that time to get to the point where you could pour it out on the page?
Oh, yeah, I've got a story. Of course. I wrote a book called The Novelist. And when I originally conceived of it, it was supposed to be a parable that illustrates the doctrine of God's sovereignty, how he's the author of a story and we are his characters, how we live in a story world. And within that story world, we're making choices of our own free will. Mm-hmm. But yet the author, as God, is making sovereign decisions which dictate our decisions. I thought that's the perfect way to illustrate God's sovereignty. So I wrote a story. It was very simple. It was about a novelist who was representing God, and then she created, or he, it was a he in the first draft, he created the story world, and so there was a story within the story. And I handed it in thinking I was just brilliant with this analogy. And it was rejected. And this was a contracted novel. It's the first one that had ever been rejected. And my editor sent it back to me, two editors, in fact, and said, this isn't working. It's an intellectual exercise, and there's no heart in it.
Oh.
And I had to remind myself, people write nonfiction to get facts across. When you're writing a novel, you're writing it to reach people's emotions, to give them an emotional experience. And at the time it came back to me, which was a couple of months after I'd handed it in, I really only had one story to tell. We adopted both of our children, and our son has several mental illness. I don't know what else to call it.
Right. Yeah.
And we had been through some things with him that had ripped my heart out. Mm-hmm. There were no easy answers. Spiritually, I was gasping for breath, and it was the only story I had to write because it was absolutely all that I was thinking about during that month.
Wow.
And so I couldn't actually use my son's story. That's a little too close to home. So I have another friend who has a son who has bipolar disorder.
Huh.
And so I took some of her stories, mingled them with my emotions and the things I'd been feeling, and wrote the story like that. So I gave this, the God character who'd been the novelist, I gave her my story.
Mm.
And on those days when she locked herself in her office and started writing just to escape what was going on outside her office door, that was me. That was absolutely me.
Yeah.
That was it. And so the book was published. It won a couple of books. Awards, and I still have people say who write me and say, oh my goodness, you could have been writing about our family.
And
not everybody says that, of course, but oh, it's The Novelist.
The Novelist. I remember when my mother died, and that was just a devastating thing in my life. My mom was one of my best friends, my first cheerleader. She read my books before anybody else, and she passed in 2002, and it was just a devastating time. And at that time, I was writing for Multnomah, and probably 6 or 7 months after Mom died, my editor, Julie Schwarzberg, called me, and she said, I want you to write a book about women losing their moms. And I told her she was nuts. I said, there was no way that I could write. It was still so raw and so hurting. And it's one of those things where, like you said, I couldn't do it. It was too close. And yet God kept coming at me and saying, because I had my first reaction when my mom died was to try to find books that would help me through it, to try to find someone's words that would speak to my heart and help heal that wounded, raw place inside of me. I would wake up in the middle of the night sobbing and not even aware that I was crying until I was awake. And there wasn't anything out there. There were books on parents losing children, on spouses losing spouses. There just wasn't anything for daughters losing mothers. And that's a profound loss for a woman. And sure enough, I realized that it wasn't Julie, just my editor, who was asking me to do this, that God was asking me. But in the same way, I was able to take Julie's story of her struggles with her daughters and incorporate that into the story. So the first half of the book is about a troubled mother-daughter relationship. And then it moves into the second half of the book is about that relationship restored and then the mother becoming ill and dying and what happens for the girl who they've had their relationship restored and then she loses her mom to death. And that book, the reader's letters that I've received on that book are profound from women who say things like, I didn't even know who I was after my mother died. I had no idea what my identity was.
Right.
And what you experienced, Angie, and what you experienced from those people writing to you, it's the power of authenticity. It's the power of vulnerability mm-hmm. in the midst of our dark places and our deep places where we offer it to others and say, this was a devastating thing for me. And you know what? You will face devastating things. And the beauty of this is you're not alone.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And to admit that there are no easy answers.
Right.
I mean, sometimes nonfiction says, do this, do this, do this, remember this, pray this, you'll be okay. But fiction allows people to understand that it's okay to go through a month, 2, 3 months of grief or whatever it is you need to go through. One of my favorite movies is Tootsie. And in it, Terry Garr, the actress who plays this character, she says, I just have to feel this way until I don't feel this way anymore.
There you go.
And I've quoted that 1,000 times because when you're grieving or angry or whatever your emotional condition is, you can't just say a prayer or wave that away. You have to somehow work it through your psyche.
Yes.
And we can pray and we can be seeking God and he can be comforting us, but he understands. I mean, Jesus went away for times to pray and sent everybody else away. And there are just times when we have to nurse our spirits and our hearts. And I think a novel allows readers to understand that it's okay to grapple and struggle and to feel these things.
That's the true power when you're writing fiction, is that you are taking your readers on this vicarious experience with your characters. They enter into the life and the emotions, which is why it's so important to write a book to write a novel that has heart in it and not just an intellectual treatment. Because as you said, with fiction, you engage the heart, you engage the spirit first, and then the intellect comes into play as people start to process and understand what they've just read. And that's why it's so important for us to write out of those places that are so dark and so deep, because we know darn well anybody who takes on this task of writing, they're going to know these places, but they have to learn not to try to escape them. They have to learn how to embrace them and learn from them.
You know, one of the things that I'm sitting here that has stuck in my head this whole time is that, Angela, when you started this story, you said, my book got rejected. I'm just saying, for all of those people out there whose books get rejected, whose stories get rejected, I didn't hear Angela complaining. I didn't hear you. Okay, so maybe you just didn't tell us that you went into the room and, you know, slammed the door a few times. But at the same time, you know what you did? You rolled up your sleeves. You rethought it. You dug deeper with whatever you had. And then beyond yourself, you looked at what was around you and what other experiences that you could pull in. Right. And you made it work. And because of that, and I'm thinking how horrible the pain of rejection is in the middle of all of that. somehow you still managed to be a pro and do your job, dig deeper, and come out with a better story at the end of the day. I guess I want everybody to know that rejection is okay too. Yes. It's redirection into a better way, a better place, a deeper place, and a deeper, more authentic story.
Right.
I'm so glad you use the word redirection, because all rejection means, it doesn't mean you're not a writer. It means you've missed the mark.
Yes.
Now, and every publisher has a different mark. One publisher wants a certain kind of book, another one wants another. So you have to be sending your work to the right place. And it may be that you've just missed the mark on everybody's target, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Because this is how we learn. It's how we say, okay, I've got to, as you said, roll up my sleeves and figure out how to make this story better.
Exactly.
And rejection is our greatest teacher. It's our greatest coach. It keeps us moving forward.
I think I'm going to have that cross-stitched on a pillow. Rejection is my greatest coach. I love that.
That's wonderful. Is great. That is excellent. Angie, do you have any final words of encouragement? Believe it or not, our time is like flown by here, but do you have any final words of encouragement or wisdom? I don't know if you can top the the rejection quote, but go ahead.
Maybe I should just say it again. Well, I would just say that if you feel led to share a story, and I get emails all the time, I have a story. Well, guess what? Everybody has a great story in them somewhere.
Yes.
But if you feel that your story could benefit other people, that's the key thing.
Yes.
Then write it up. And if it's rejected the first time, the second time, then figure out how to make it not focus on you so much, but think about how can I change this so it helps a reader who's reading. Writing is very other-centered, or at least it should be, to be really good.
Thank you, Angie. We have been so blessed to have you here. Thank you so much for sharing the truths that God has taught you and for sharing your heart with us. We just appreciate you taking your time to spend it with us.
Thank you so much for having me on your debut podcast. I'm so excited.
This has been the Write from the Deep podcast.
I'm Karen Ball.
And I'm Erin Taylor Young.
And I'm Angie Hunt.
Embrace the deep.
Your writing and your life will never be the same.
Amen.
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 Ha, ha, ha.